So there's been a lot happening in the self-advocacy space and a number of fantastic self-advocacy projects coming out of our sister organisation, Self-Advocacy Resource Unit, or SARU. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Dean Dadson, and he'll take it from there. Thank you, Dean.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. How are you? This is probably a bit of a hard gig in the afternoon, so you might be a bit tired, but hopefully we'll be able to present you with some great information. I'd like to sort of firstly introduce Bec Biddle, who is going to speak today. She'll talk about at All Abilities Advocacy Southwest. Sue Smith, who is from SARU, where I work, and Fran Lee, who is here as a representative of Brain Injury Matters. But first off, what we'd like to do is just to start off with a bit of a small film of a group that we're currently working with.
We want you to know.
I have right to be with my boyfriend.
Quality's very important to me.
I don't want to be sexy.
My freedom.
I have the right to love. Everyone has the right to be treated fairly and equally.
Respect our feelings.
Baby and friends are important to me.
I have the right to enjoy my life.
We have the right to be happy.
Better access human minds.
I'd like to spend time with my boyfriend. But I'm sexy. I'm sexy. I'm sexy and you know it. I'm sexy and you know it.
We want equality.
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 Pretty fantastic group. I'll talk a little bit about the Rainbow Rights and Advocacy Self-Advocacy Group just a little later. Today I sort of wanted to talk a little bit about the NDIS transition support package that was two support packages actually that have been made available through the Victorian government to SARU. We received the first round about 18 months ago, and its overall goal really is to support self-advocacy groups to get ready for the NDIS. One of the obstacles that we've sort of found through working with self-advocacy groups, and it's been talked about by Mary earlier on, and I'm sure you discussed it earlier on in the day, is the lack of information around future funding for self-advocacy groups and their resourcing. So most self-advocacy groups don't receive any funding whatsoever. There's probably, I think there's about four that receive very, very little funding, up to about $30,000. So it's not a lot of money. One group does receive a fairly substantial amount, and that's Diversity and Disability, who work with people from core communities. So I thought I'd talk really about the first round and what we did with self-advocacy groups in partnership to try and get them ready for the NDIS, whatever that means. So there are eight main aims, and I'll talk about the aims and just a few of the activities that we undertook for those things. So the first one was to strengthen existing self-advocacy groups and networks to increase their engagement with the NDIS. And as part of that, the activity that we sort of undertook was doing a SWOT analysis with most of the groups, and that looked at, you know, obviously strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, but also looked at their training needs, looked at sort of partnerships, engaging with other groups, other organisations, other politicians within the community to strengthen them. We also, through that SWOT, looked at at-risk self-advocacy groups. That's self-advocacy groups that didn't have a lot of natural supports around them, or that were sort of in trouble, because sometimes groups ebb and flow, and so we wanted to also look at those groups. And one of the aims of the first transition package was to actually bring those groups that were at risk out of risk and into healthy self-advocacy groups. The second aim was to support the establishment of one new self-advocacy group, including its engagement with the NDIS. And Rainbow Rights were the one. And what a fabulous group. They're actually the first LGBTIQ plus group for people with an intellectual disability in Victoria, and possibly Australia. We don't know if there's another self-advocacy group around, but they're a fantastic group, and they're at the moment just growing, and they're doing a number of things, and I'll talk about that a little bit later when I talk about the innovation in advocacy projects. The activities that we undertook with Rainbow Rights was providing support to members to sort of develop a belonging, some group ownership, and that meant getting rid of. That's probably not the term I should use. That meant ensuring that support workers no longer came to the group, because what we found was that support workers were coming along to the group, and the power sort of structure sort of changed. The moment those support workers left the group, things changed. And so now we're trying to sort of establish that sense of it's our group, not my group, but their group, and that belonging. So they're a fantastic group, but they're new, and it'll probably take another good 12 months to get them really established. We've been working with them for nearly 12 months, or a bit over 12 months now. The third aim was to promote and support self-advocacy group network development in the context of the NDIS. And so that was around sort of building sort of local community networks with DSOs, with LACs, with other support groups, statewide and Australia-wide networks. And Sue's going to talk a bit, a lot later, about the Australian Self-Advocacy Project and the Victorian Self-Advocacy Network, which links into that. The fourth aim was to support community capacity building of self-advocacy groups, and that involved mapping community to identify local champions and key stakeholders. We haven't done a lot of that as of yet with all the groups, so we've done bits and pieces, but that will continue into the second round of the transition package. The fifth aim was to provide resources and training for self-advocacy groups, including NDIS-specific training and resources. So we did. We developed some targeted training based on the needs of the groups and the aspirations of the local self-advocacy groups, and we produced an NDIS-specific easy English training using a range of accessible media. The sixth aim was to build the capacity of people with disabilities to participate participate in the NDIS. So that was sort of more individual rather than group. And what we did was we developed and distributed resources, including that training, but we also developed up a short, I think it's about 10-minute film called What Do You Need to Know? About pre-planning, about getting ready for the NDIS, and it was in very plain English. Lots of a fun film. The seventh aim was to build the capacity of SARU to increase support and resources for self-advocacy groups across Victoria. And part of that was to review and redevelop our SARU website. We've done some of that, but it's going to take a lot longer, so the new website hasn't gone live, and it'll be a while before that happens. And then the second round continues very much down the same path, with the addition of employing a SARU project worker 3 days a week until June 2019. And the aim of that project worker is really to work with the groups around submission writing for the LIC, for the ILC. Working with each and every individual group to get them to a stage where they can actually put in submissions, so some templates, stuff like that, around what it is that they want. The other thing is that this worker will take some work away from myself and my other colleagues, managing employment of and providing some supervision to current support workers for the groups. What sort of occurred over that time are some really, really good partnerships have been developed with advocacy organisations, including AMIDA, including Grampians Disability Advocacy, and also REAC. So there's lots, I think, of opportunities there for the groups to have some more partnerships with other advocacy organisations. I'd like to call Beck up now. So Beck's going to talk a little bit about All Abilities Southwest. And after Beck, I'll talk a little bit about the advocacy innovation projects. Thanks, Beck.
Thanks, Dean. Yep. Thank you, Dean. Hi, everyone. My name is Becca Biddle. I'm the representative for the All Abilities Advocacy Self-Advocacy Group in the Southwest Victoria. I'm also on the Victorian Self-Advocacy Network, the VSAN Committee, and the NDIS Working Group, and the Australian Self-Advocacy Project. I have been the representative for the All Abilities for around 6 years. In my time, I have attended a lot of self-advocacy meetings in Melbourne representing the group. I also help Kylie, All Ability Support Worker, with stuff around dangerous deeds, exhibition in Warrnambool. I also helped her with the Speak Up Space in Warrnambool. The Speak Up Space was a shop front where we did artwork and dangerous deeds projection night. It was a space where we could sit around and talk about self-advocacy and other things and chill out. It went for about a month and was sponsored by SARU. Nearly 200 people came along over that time. The Speak Up Space had a huge influence on the All Abilities group, and they really enjoyed it, catching up and talking to meet with their friends, and All Abilities thought it would be a great thing to have always. All abilities now has a choir and is working on a CD, and we're going to launch it at the Port Fairy Country Festival. We are also working on the All Abilities, having a smaller group to talk about issues and talking those issues, taking those issues to the bigger groups. The groups that are part of the All Abilities are from Hamilton, Terang, Portland, Warrnambool. There is a lot of travelling involved. All up, we have around 70 members as part of the project. We are trying to work out better ways to meet and talk about issues. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Beck. All Abilities are doing an enormous amount of work, and they are also part of the Advocacy Innovation Project grant that we got. So some fantastic stuff there. So congrats, Beck. It's great. It's great. Okay, so I suppose I'd like to talk now about the Innovation in Advocacy, or the Advocacy Innovation Projects. Working with the self-advocacy groups... Working with the self-advocacy groups, SARU actually applied for the grants earlier this year, and we actually received funding for four groups, which is fantastic. So one group was All Abilities, another group was Rainbow Rights, which you just recently saw, New Wave and Deafblind Victorians. What should be noted is that those groups also receive support through the transition package as well. So it's a bit of a bonus, which is fantastic. So now I'll just talk about the four projects. Rainbow Rights, as I explained before, they're a self-advocacy group run by and for people with an intellectual disability who identify as GLBTIQ or Q. The key aims of the project is to increase the group's membership and its diversity. So currently it's made up predominantly of male members, but with one person who is a transgender. So the group are looking at exploring the addition of, you know, hopefully getting women involved, or it may well be that another group starts that are only for women. So that's sort of going to be looked at. The other things that we want to do with the group and are currently doing with the group is sort of organising meetings with key leaders and organisations in the LGBTIQ community. So last year they actually met with Ro Allen and Jude Munro, who's the chair of the new Victorian Pride Centre. So they've developed up some great links. They also met with Jenny Macklin as opposition spokesperson for disability. So fantastic sort of stuff. We're also working with them to talk to the Pride March organisers to get them right down the front so that they lead the Pride March. Whether that happens, we're not sure, but we're working with them, and they're sort of lobbying for that to happen. Also working with them lobby the Pride Centre management about getting a permanent space for them. And last year Jude Munro indicated that may be a possibility, so fantastic stuff. We're also working with them to build their public speaking capacity, and that will take some time, and to explore sort of opportunities during midsummer 2018, which is coming up really, really shortly. They've got now a stall at the Carnival Day, I think on January the 14th, on Sunday. So if anybody's free, come down to the Yarra, to I think the Alexandra Gardens, and they'll be there handing out badges and having lots and lots of fun. They're also attending a two-day conference the 2 days before that event as well. So some fantastic stuff is happening. With another group, Deafblind Victorian, the key aims for that project is to establish a small office in Ross House, and that's been done, which is just fantastic. Deafblind Victorians, they were storing a whole lot of their information and resources in the Able Link upstairs, some at SARU and some at people's homes in various suburbs around Melbourne. So now they've got a place to meet, which is just fantastic. The other thing that they've got was the engagement of a support worker who had Auslan and tactile Auslan skills. And so we were able to work with them and engage somebody to work with them for the next 8-9 months until the project finishes. And the support worker would just assist them with sort of presentations and looking at other funding sources for them. The aims of the project is to actually run some more deafblind forums for people who are deafblind. And that's about sort of building a community, getting out to extremely isolated people, which most deafblind people are. The next group that we're working with is New Wave. And they're down in Gippsland. They're a group that have been around for about 6-7 years, I think, Sue, is that right?
Longer, maybe
about 10 years. So they've been around for a long time. They're a fantastic group. We were down in Maui on Friday, and we've got them a support worker. So the project itself is a little behind, but we're now getting back on track, which is just fantastic. So this was about building the capacity within the group and getting new members, establishing a base from which to work. They were situated with an advocacy organisation down there, but had to move. So we've worked with DHHS down there, who are great supporters of the group, they're moving into a new office and getting that established over the next few weeks, which is really fantastic. The other part of the project was actually working. New Wave do training and public speaking and get out quite a lot, and it was about redeveloping some of their resources to actually get to hard to reach individuals. So people with an intellectual disability and acquired brain injury who might be living in group homes, and to actually get out to them and talk to them about their rights and their opportunities with the NDIS, and also opportunities for people to join the group. So that's really important for them. The last one, and not the least, is All Abilities, which is a group down in South West Victoria that Beck is part of. The key aims of that project is to develop a new model of supporting sub-regional self-advocacy groups in South West Victoria. As Beck said, the groups come from Hamilton, Portland, Terang and Warrnambool, and so there's great distances for members to actually come to meet. And so this is looking at establishing, as Beck said, a smaller group and other ways of meeting. So whether that be through technology, whether it be through accessing some funds to get people to the meetings, we're not quite sure yet, but it's underway, and it's a fabulous opportunity to do a bit of a pilot and see how that works with maybe some other groups in regional Victoria. So that's about it for me, and if you've got any questions, please feel free. But what I'll do now is I'll hand over to Sue, and maybe we can have questions at the end, if that's all right. Thank you.
Just wait for my co-presenter. So we're going to talk about three projects. I've got to thank Fran up front, because there was meant to be, Colin Hisco from Reinforce was meant to do some of this as well, and so at the last minute, poor Fran has to step in for the three projects that I'm talking about and cover all of them with me. So first I'm going to talk about the Australian Self-Advocacy Project, which is funded through the National Disability Insurance Agency. It's come out of the realisation for self-advocacy in Victoria, having had a self-advocacy resource unit, which has proven to strengthen self-advocacy, increase the numbers. But with the transition and listening to Mary's talk to the NDIS, having a voice within the state government is not necessarily going to be enough, and that groups around Australia really need to have a united voice at the national level. But the other thing that has happened is around through the 80s, self-advocacy was really strong in Australia, and I'm just about to show a little video, so this is by way of introduction to it. It actually arose in the early 70s, late 60s, from Sweden, which so many things came from Sweden in that time, and self-advocacy was considered a civil rights movement, particularly for people with intellectual disabilities. So in the rest of the world, self-advocacy groups are nearly 100% run by and for people with intellectual disabilities. So Victoria is quite unique in that we're funded to support groups run by and for people with intellectual disabilities, acquired brain injury with complex communication support needs. An example of a group for that would be Deafblind Victorians. But self-advocacy went through a boom in the 80s, and in Australia there was a national People First, which is Self-Advocacy Resource Unit. There was a peak, People First Australia, and then the 90s hit and it was decimated. The Victorian government responded to that with the idea of ASARU, but the rest of Australia, which was our starting point, was unknown, really. By way of an introduction, we just recently had the first national self-advocacy conference in 30 years in Melbourne, and this was a little video we made to remember and recognise the work over the course of the 80s and into the 90s. And current.
Get up, stand up.
Lots of 80s fashion.
Easy, skizzy, game, dine, and go to heaven in Jesus' name, Lord. We
It's a very proud history indeed, and I would say in Victoria, the work of the self-advocacy groups in the 80s were really led the way in closing institutions, led the way in campaigning for easy English and accessible information. So, yeah. So, on to the project. So, the NDIA has funded the Australian Self-Advocacy Project, and it is about coming up with a model and a plan for setting up self-advocacy resource centres around Australia. Now, having said that, so far, that's what the funding's for, a model and a plan. And on our grant agreement, it's when that goes in, then they will look at it. So there's no commitment to funding such a model. And I wouldn't even like to hesitate if that will happen, to make a guess. But so the first thing we did is we had to find out what groups were out there, because while Victoria, you know, is reasonably strong compared to the rest of Australia, we knew that it was quite decimated around Australia. So we found one group in Western Australia, three, and that's not to say there's not more, but this is all we could find through lots of searches and contacts. Three groups in South Australia, three groups in Tasmania, one group in Canberra, sort of two groups in Queensland. New South Wales a bit of an unknown. They sort of kept popping up, but I'd say about six. And so you can see it was quite different. And again, like Dean said, across the board, it's about maybe linking with someone to be able to survive. Very few groups are running on their in their own right, or the ones that are running out of someone's house and with little bits and pieces. So the important thing then was to sort of work on those principles of making sure people have all the information in accessible ways. And so the first step was, once we found the groups, was to give them the information they needed to make a decision as to whether what the project was and whether they wanted to take part. The response was pretty amazing. We had, in the end, 70 organisations, self-advocacy groups, all groups that would be interested or have been traditionally supporting self-advocacy, such as DPOs, advocacy services, Peak Bodies, Dana, Mary's one of the consultants on the project. And so it was really about providing lots of information about it. And we also paid Paul Dunn to do a research paper about what's happening with self-advocacy around the world now, what's happening in Australia, and to come up with three models of how it could run as a starting point, because we were really keen to do co-design and for us not to really have an opinion. And so they were a starting point, but when we'll talk about the consultations later, but they were open to change as they were. And but it was about finding the preferred model in consultations around Australia. The other important part was that the employment of members of groups from Victoria as co-workers on the project, because which Beck was one, Fran was the other, because they have the knowledge. They know, as a member of a self-advocacy group, what it is to have a self-advocacy resource unit that supports, so they could speak to that. And Fran has because Fran, when we first approached you to work, you weren't really quite aware, I thought we'd said, but we obviously hadn't, about how you were going to work with us.
Yeah, so I was told I was going to be going to Queensland. Yeah. Thanks. I was told I was going to Queensland, so I just thought that was so unreal. I just couldn't wait. And a bit after, me and Sue got talking, and she said, you'll be paid for this. And I thought, I couldn't believe it. So I got the bonus of going there and plus being paid, which I never dreamt of. So that was so good.
And Fran's going to talk a little bit about her role in the consultations later, because it was quite significant, really. After getting the papers and having such a great response, I'll just quickly talk about the three models that were proposed that we went out and consulted with. And also, it was really important, we trialled all the presentations with a self-advocacy group in Victoria, because we needed to know, and it was great because they went too complicated. So it was right from the start, like, how can we do this right? So the three models that were presented were one that was called the hub and spoke model, in which one organisation would tender or get funded. We're not sure. It's this mystical thing of some money coming from somewhere for it. To set up a hub, the self-advocacy, National Self-Advocacy Resource Centre, and spokes in each state. So self-advocacy resource centres in each state and territory. And all the information about it talked about the pros and cons of that, so it'd really be only one organisation. The other model was called the partnership model, which you see up there, in which there'd be a national body, but it would, that's it, so an organisation or a consortium could apply to get funding for that, and there would be independently run self-advocacy resource centres in each state and territory. So in each state and territory, it would be organisations in that state that would apply to run it. So it wouldn't be someone from, you know, Western Australia running one in New South Wales. And the other one, which was what was called the cheap and nasty one, which was there'd be one office with lots of workers that would fly out or do outreach work to the states. And as I thought it would be, the preferred model was the partnership model, with each state and territory having key players in their state getting funding to set up and run, which made lots of sense because they're on the ground, they know their governments. Like listening to Mary's talk, you know, if you're a New South Wales organisation that's got the funding to run it, you know how to, you've got your links with the New South Wales government and know the situation. So that was approved by 82% as the preferred model. So how we did it, again, I would say this part was co-design. It was a learning curve. I would say it was okay co-design, but what it's really taught us, which I'll talk at the end about the next part of it, which is setting up a national website next year, is the need to up that and to really look at what co-production is and how to really, that the groups are really have ownership of that and are receiving, you know, a significant part of the budget to develop things. There was two parts. The first consultations, which I'll then get Fran to talk about, were face-to-face. So we went and met with everybody, all the key stakeholders that had signed up, the groups, and that was a way of building a relationship. And we just listened, didn't we, Fran? Oh, well, Fran did some great talking, but it was about not letting them think we came in with, we've already got an idea and this is what we want you to agree to. And so they were fantastic consultations, and I was just saying to Mary, what amazed me in listening to Mary's talk, in a time when advocacy service and DPOs and that are losing funding, I really expected, we were really sensitive talking before we went about, they might be a bit, who are you coming in and what's this thing? The generosity of spirit, the absolute enthusiasm for it, and the absolute across the board thing, this is a must, was quite surprising. And they contributed a lot to it. And then the second, we went back a second time, and everyone we'd met individually, we brought together in forums in each state. So Fran, how did you find the consultations and your role in them?
I really was surprised with the consultations. For instance, we went to see Synapse in Queensland, and having the discussions there was really interesting. She wanted to know everything about my journey, everything about brain injury matters, and it was really good to tell my story and my point of view, and I never expected they would care what I thought I had to say, so that was really good.
Yeah, well, and so part of it was explaining why self-advocacy matters, wasn't it?
Yes.
Resource units.
So, I mean, why I think it matters so much to me is before I got involved in all of this, I was alone and not well and at home and thinking that was the end of my life and that was the way it was going to be forever. And it gave me something to do, which I really enjoy, and I give a lot and I get a lot out of it too, which makes so much difference. And it was just great to see everyone over there and learn and listen to what was important to them, and it really gave us a lot of ideas and help with the process.
Yeah, it was great. And I remember Fran, after the very first meeting, which was with Side Apps, and she walked out and you said, I just thought they'd listen to you and Sally. I didn't think they'd listen to me. And in fact, most of the time, people were much more interested in Fran talking as a self-advocate, as a member of a group, than us. Don't you think that?
Yeah, that's what, you know, really blew my mind. I just couldn't believe that they would care. And it was sort of like that. All the consultations afterwards was the same thing again. They were so interested in finding out my journey and my role in advocacy, which was really nice.
Even though 82% of people preferred the partnership model, there was quite a lot of refinements that came out of the consultations. So one was the need for an establishment period before they're set up, so that groups could start to really understand what's happening and have control of what's happening. That nothing about me without me, because I don't think inclusion's quite the right word, it's nothing about me without me principle came through loud and clear. So members of self-advocacy groups wanted to sit on the tender process, deciding who would get it if in the future that does happen. They wanted to be on every board and committee. They wanted to be involved in selecting staff. They wanted to be informing the policies. That was so strong, wasn't it, Fran? It's just that we should be there every step of the way. And so an establishment period gives time for the groups to get up to speed, to not just have this. I mean, the SARU, which was fantastic, but the thing went out, the Saab consortium that runs SARU, which is Brain Injury Matters, Reinforce, and MIDA, and START, got it, and we just started. But there needed to be this period before where the groups were taken on that journey and felt they had control in that. So the need for an establishment period was very clear. The funding levels was really tricky, because most people said, it can't be done bitsy. Self-advocacy was so strong in the 80s and was destroyed so sort of terribly in the 90s, that there has to be ongoing funding, it has to be a real commitment, and it has to be the level that needs to be sustainable. And also, because part of the consultations, we were going to organisations that were involved with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, involved with people from core backgrounds, and people who are deafblind. And the depth of what was required there to bring self-advocacy in was really complex, and so you need that commitment. But I remember Damien Griffiths from First Peoples Disability Network, he said something that really I found quite incredible. He said many Indigenous people with intellectual disability or acquired brain injury are quite isolated in their communities. Often they're in group homes with people that are not from that background. And what he said is he thought self-advocacy groups had the potential to re-engage people in their culture and their community, which I found such a powerful statement. I'd never even thought of self-advocacy groups having that. But to do it, again, requires a real commitment to the funding, and that it can't just be funded for 3 years and then see you later, because they've been through that before. The other thing was about who can apply. So it had to be people with organisations, this is from the consultations, with people with disabilities on their boards or committees. It couldn't be service providers. It had to be organisations, and this really came out from a lot of the groups and the key stakeholders, who have run using human rights principles, but a lot of the members of the groups will write it, but they have to show that they do. It's not enough to have a paragraph in your mission statement. You have to demonstrate that you're actually doing that. So these were the criteria and the exchanges to that original partnership model that made it quite rich. And so the next thing, the most important thing that we just had on the 26th of October was, as I mentioned, the first time we had a national, there was a national disability self-advocacy conference in 30 years, and it was remarkable. And Fran, what did you like about the conference? And then I'm going to give you a hoi peck.
I thought the conference was great. It was so good catching up with everyone I've met from Queensland that came over to Melbourne. And just seeing everyone, how passionate they were, and it was a really good day. They had some wonderful guest speakers, and I got a lot out of that. I think everyone enjoyed the socialising part of it too. One of the best parts of the day was when it finished and we went to the pub. So that was really good. Everyone got together and had a really good time. Also, after the pub, we all stayed in the same hotel. So afterwards, everyone kind of got together and were talking about their journeys and what had happened to them along the way and all that stuff. So it was really nice. It was really good. Also,
Beck, I'm sorry to just spring you on you. What did you find about the conference for you?
The conference, me, I quite really enjoyed it. I took most of the photos and videos, but it was great seeing everyone come along and seeing the guys for New South Wales. And just catching up with everyone. It was, and just listening to stories and stuff. And, I really enjoyed it.
And the conference was also, again, using those principles of co-design. So the two people to coordinate the conference were Peter Ferguson, who's the president of Brain Injury Matters, and Colin Hisco, who's with Reinforce. So they were the conference coordinators. They settled on straight away the keynote speakers need to be members of self-advocacy groups, and in fact they were. And what two speeches they were like, God, rallying speeches back to the days of the civil rights movement, really. And so they coordinated the whole event. And at the end of it, there was just sort of an open mic about people to make comments, and I still get a bit emotional. So a lot of people got up and said, this is the best thing I've done in my life ever, which was really great. First of all, we felt, that's great, like we succeeded in doing a great conference. And then it quite overwhelmed me. If this is the best thing in your life, what is that saying? You know, it's just, it's a yin and yang thing. Part of the conference too is they did brainstorming about how to set up a self-advocacy network, national self-advocacy network, and I guess there's thinkings too, if the Australian Self-Advocacy Project doesn't get funding, how can they do that on minimal or no funding? And there were great ideas came out of that. So the next step is we got more funding to develop a website, a national self-advocacy website, which is great, but I think most of you would know that there's a limit to websites. So what we're going to try and do is we're going back, as I said, it's really a chance to get the groups to start in each state to start working together. There'll be money for them to develop content, to test it, to do the design of it. And so it's really a chance to do that co-production process and get people actively involved in making it theirs. And so really it's about an engagement thing, and the website's great, but I think the process of development will be really important. And Fran, you're going to be involved in the consultations again?
I am, so it's so exciting. When I first had my brain injury, I wouldn't even go outside. I wouldn't even get to the letterbox. I was so my body, it was like being born again. I felt like a different person. I couldn't walk at that stage or talk, so it was really, really hard. And to get involved in this just gave me back so much inspiration and so much joy, I guess. And I think self-advocacy really saved my life, because being that way, I was kind of on the border of a nursing home. So my vision was I'd probably end up in there and dying, like just being so bored and just so depressed. But this, everything with the ASAP thing and having the... having to get to go to Queensland and Darwin coming up is just so exciting.
And now I've realised I've done what I usually do and banged on too much. We've got 5 minutes each for the next two projects, so I hope you don't mind if we speed through them. So that's the ASAP. And the one thing that Fran and Beck did have to put up with is I have a severe phobia of flying. I had to do 29 return flights in a 6 month period, and I'm not fun to travel with really on a plane, am I? Yeah.
No,
Dean's done it. So I'm very quickly going to go through the voice at the table. This is a project, had been a passion of mine. Years ago, I was involved with the Breast Cancer Network Australia, and they had started this thing called A Seat at the Table for women who had breast cancer, sitting on research committees and hospital and medical committees, because they identified that, well, the two women that founded BCNA, Breast Cancer Network Australia, went along to a meeting with doctors and surgeons, and this won't surprise you, having been in the medical system, where they were like, ooh, women with breast cancer, what do we do with them? And so they came up with this project called A Seat at the Table, which was training women with breast cancer to have the skills and the knowledge and what to expect to sit on boards and committees. And it was a huge success. And so for years I thought, I think this has real potential, particularly for people with cognitive disabilities. So we got funding. I did change the name slightly to A Voice at the Table to set up a project, and the NDIA funded it initially, to increase the number of people with cognitive disabilities on boards and committees and inputting into policy and program design. And because it's really across the board, I think, Beck, you were involved, and Fran, that's the voice least heard, and yet so many of the decisions are made impact on people's lives. And I'm sorry for this to be a speed thing. So there's two parts. One was created a quite extensive training, which Beck and Fran did, went over 6 days, sitting on boards and committees, how to choose, about how to do advice, what to expect, what your rights are. And lots of great guest speakers. Mary was one. Andrew Coote, the former Parliamentary Secretary on Disability, was another. And the other part of it was, it's okay to talk to people about, you know, learning about how to do that, but then if organisations don't run meetings that are inclusive, well, what's the point? So the other part was developing tips and guidelines for organisations about how to run fully inclusive meetings. So resources developed for that were tip sheets for the organisations and first of all, to my steering committee, I took a big 41-page book, and their response was, that'll be a dust gatherer. You better do some tip sheets. So this the shorter version. And then there's a big important one about how the chair and all different members of the committees can make the meetings more inclusive of everyone. And, you know, the interesting thing, we've trialled them, and a lot of the committees said, this really isn't to do anything with people with cognitive disabilities or disabilities, it's just good meetings practice that everyone should have. And then there was the training. So I'm just going to ask Beck to talk a little bit. You did Voice at the Table, and what was your experience with that?
It was, I, re- I thought, oh, you know, it sounds a bit boring, 6 days and stuff, but it was really good. I really got a lot out of it. They were great speakers and really made me not judge myself so harshly. And I'd never spoken in public before doing that. So since hearing the voice at the table training, I've spoken in public many times, and it just gave me the tips and the knowledge to knowing how to talk and deliver things and just have the confidence.
And after the first lot of training, you went to a meeting with the NDIA with David Bowen there, and you've got a great story about the very first tip that you used at that meeting.
Yeah. Well, I was quite nervous about that meeting and talking in front of the NDIA and stuff. And so I remembered the tip that I was told about looking for someone smiling and nodding. And it was actually David that was doing it, and I was talking to him, so that was a bonus. And he just made it so much easier to get through. I mean, if everyone's sort of, you know, looking at you like this, it kind of makes you think, oh, God, I'm doing terrible. But he really made it seem better.
So that's a very quick wrap up of the voice at the table. But we've got two more. So we've got another lot of funding for a project we're working on now around voice at the table and civic participation. So it's working with the Office of Disability and identifying a committee within government that's not within any part of disability, a part of government that might not have come across this before, and developing a web page for governments and others about how to do that, but also trying to get the word out there and spread the word that you've got to include people with intellectual disability and acquired brain injury, cognitive disabilities on these committees, and hopefully it'll work really well and they'll advise it to everyone else. And then we have another lot of funding for it to basically try and run the training, but also to find organisations, and I'm just a call out to the advocacy organisations there, who might be interested in running the training and developing and working with us to develop some sort of train the trainer thing, so it's not just dependent on SARU, that the training's out there for others to use. So, and I think VSAN's going to have to hit the cutting room floor. I think we've run out of time. But you might... We might be able to do it another one. So I'm sorry for VSAD, Beck and the Victorian Self-Advocacy Network, but we've run out of time.
Yes. Yeah.